Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, what is up? It is me, not Scott Tailford, but actually Ewan Patterson of What Culture Gaming, joined as ever by Jules Gill.
Hello everyone.
And Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
That was a long delayed hello there after the introduction.
Yeah, anyone who's like not watching the video side of this is just going to be like, where's he gone?
That's the best thing about a podcast, a nice pregnant pause.
Anyway, we're going to talk about the mechanics of how video games basically keep you hooked. Because this morning we kind of were thinking about topics to discuss, and I brought up immersion and how games tend to really keep me playing based on how much I can get lost in their given world.
Yeah.
You think of games like Skyrim and Red Dead and other stuff like that where I basically just sank hundreds and hundreds of hours unashamedly into those experiences because I've been so invested in those given worlds. Mm-hmm. And whereas on the other end of the spectrum, you think of something like Rainbow Six, which is my most played game ever, Siege.
Like hundreds of hours.
Yes, hundreds and hundreds of hours. I probably could have learned a different language in that time. But yeah, that game kept me hooked based on the mechanics of its multiplayer.
Yep.
The seasonal changes that they introduced every now and then with the introduction of new operators and then them changing the meta and constantly tweaking the game here and there. And that kept me hooked for a while. And I thought it would be very interesting if we basically go into that and talk about almost like the science of how video games keep your interest for better and for worse.
Because it is a sweet science. Because if you are a video game publisher out there, you're basically, the more hooked you get your audience, the more money you can effectively extort from them further down the line. Now, I'm not saying that all games come up with an idea of trying to sell you something further down the line, but if you think about it, the games that do hook people in for the most amount of time usually end up being the most financially successful as well. So I guess what we're going to do is break down what parts make up immersion, because for you were saying before, it's like world building. It's about losing yourself, believing that you encompass a role within there and that you exist within it. So that's, I'd say that narrative immersion is very important.
Narrative immersion, definitely, but it's weird. I have like a niche thing with this. So it's like, you know, you have a well-constructed story can keep me invested for hours at a time. But if I'm able to take on my own story and basically fashion my own rules, almost like it's role-playing, then that basically gives me endless amount of time to just get invested and lost in something. Like, you know, I think the Elder Scrolls is a great example of that, because I can keep playing that, not doing the main quest line and pretending what I am and what I'm doing in this world. Same goes for the current Red Dead Online. They've just introduced new roles for you to do, and they've integrated that immersive quality in the role playing aspect with some of the things we're going to touch on later, like seasonal events and, you know, the economy keeping you interested, because those frontier pursuits, as they're called, they are literally jobs that you do in the world. And if you don't earn money in that game, you're going to starve to death and your horse is going to be it. So you are playing not only to make a success, but in the early stages of that game, certainly you are playing to survive. And it's not difficult to get money, but if you break it down to those exact elements, if you were to just hop into Red Dead Online and do nothing, you would starve and die. There you go.
What sort of games have immersed you, Ben Roy?
Well, the one that I can think to a little bit while ago, it feels like a bit vintage talking about this now, but Minecraft.
Okay.
You remember just, you know, going into that sandbox and I can build.
Punching that tree.
Yeah. After punching hundreds of thousands of trees, I think my account across three platforms is something like over 500 hours. Just building things like, you know, I'm just going to build the Golden Gate Bridge today.
Nice.
Now, tomorrow, I'm just going to venture off into the wild and just see what happens.
See, Minecraft's an interesting one because there's no end game to it. In essence, you create your own sort of story
and immersion.
They did
add, like, the Ender Dragon stuff, which people tried to latch onto. But yeah, there's essentially nothing there. Like, especially in the early days when you would go so far out in one direction that the game could not render blocks anymore. And you get, it's like you go to this weird, like, sort of like different world where half things are just being constructed.
Weird.
You just, like, it looks like, imagine, say, like, comets hit the Earth and it's just like loads of craters and weird bits missing everywhere. That was always fun to try and see if you could reach that area.
So was it, because you touched on the creative aspects of Minecraft there. When I played Minecraft, it was a mixture of the both. I enjoyed both the creating side and I actually enjoyed the survivalist aspect of it all as well. I remember that first night on Minecraft, I was like, oh, wee, look at this. Oh crap, better dig a hole in the ground and pray that the noises where it's all like,
I mean, what you've described there is probably the most sort of like on the nose form of a gameplay loop that you could get, because you were basically saying like, okay, if I don't do this, I starve and die, but if I have to make sure I'm safe at night, and then the cycle starts again. And a concept of a gameplay loop is basically at its core the very thing that all of these publishers are trying to do. They are trying to hook us into this cycle of, well, you're never going to get out of this, but it's very easy to slip into it. And it can be shown in so many different ways. In shooting games, it's the feedback you get after killing someone because it's like an immediate reward. You want to chase it again. You'll do whatever it is to
let
get it
numbers
again.
Numbers go up.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got like in FIFA or sports game, it's scoring goals. It's that immediate thing of like, I am winning and therefore that is the feeling I want to chase. But you can break it down even further and go into narrative gameplay loops because you are progressing through the story. You could go through reward loops where you're doing it for like looter shooters, like the Borderlands 3 is a good example because it's just come out. You're chasing that sort of next big upgrade to your character. But going way back way to my day, because you guys are just, you're too young, aren't
Amoebas,
you?
I mean, basically.
Yeah, Amoebas. Yeah. And so, you know, back in the days of the arcade when I used to run around and have hair.
The
I
arcade?
It was archaic, the arcade. And it was about the score. Literally, that was what it was. You would be
Time Crisis, House of the Dead.
What a game.
I love Time Crisis. We had our local UCI cinema. We used to have a little arcade around the side. They had Time Crisis and House of the Dead.
You guys ever play Point Blank?
No.
Oh man, you guys are missing out.
You
Blank
ever play Point Blank?
There was one game in our arcade though. In I think it was a Hollywood Bowl. If people know what that is, and you used to be able to. Now I was about 13, maybe a bit younger. Pull the plug out. Plug it back in. What? You've got like 12 free credits.
Whoa! You monster! Oh. You absolute little tyke.
Well, it's what you would spend.
Anarchist Ben Roy.
You would spend all your money on that Jurassic Park game with the Lost World one.
I can't believe I'm picturing 13-year-old Ben Roy now with a Shea shirt on right now and just Viva la Revolution.
Just get your friend to go and ask for help over at the other machine. Oh, the claw machine's stuck. Pull it out. Put it back in.
Amazing.
Back in. Sometimes it worked for House of the Dead 3 as well.
Tips for Ben Roy there. Cheap date, that is.
Pull the plug
steal
out.
The game.
But those games are perfect examples because it was like, you know, a physical investment of like actual money to play those games. So you felt that your time with them was like, okay, it's got to have some feedback. It's got to keep me hooked in order to put more money into it. And how they would usually do that is by artificially inflating difficulty so that you would feel like when you overcame a challenge, you'd suddenly be like, oh, that was the reason why I liked this game. Or they would do things like reward you, or they would just be like, it would usually come down to the score. If you could point at something and say, well, until Ben Roy came along and unplugged it and reset the scores, that is, that mine is the top score, then obviously it's something to beat and it's a gameplay loop in itself because you're like, oh, that's the immediate feedback I get. It's so strange how many ways games trick us.
And let's just say with score, that kind of transferred over to the whole achievement thing. Especially for me, I do love a good platinum trophy.
Right. Yes.
Give me a good platinum trophy.
It is the chase of the platinum trophy that will see so many people immerse themselves forcibly into a game. Yep. Because how many times have you...
I've got to get those 500 bloody bird feathers again. Yeah. I have to get this...
And it's so silly because it's like, how many games do you know that have multiple difficulty settings that you can only get once you've beaten the game the first time, but you sit there and you think, that was a 40-hour game that I've just spent my time on. But it's the last trophy that I need to get, so I'm going to
this
go
is
back
the worst
in the game.
Double-edged sword as well, because when DLC comes out and then you... I mean, you still get the platinum, but it still says you're not as complete anymore. Like, and I had that with the Spider-Man DLC, and like I couldn't be asked because the DLC I thought was fairly lackluster compared to the main game. I was like, well, now that I got the platinum, it's like, well, you haven't completed everything.
I've only just finally gone back through the Spider-Man PS4 and completed it, and I finished it, and I was like, right, I didn't even enjoy my last 3 hours of playing this game because I just wanted it to be done now.
Also, though, like the Resident Evil 2 platinum, joy to get.
Oh yeah, loved that was good. That was
fun. Now that they've done that same thing, like, oh, there's a few more trophies in that really hard mode, which I can't remember the name of. It's just like, it's almost impossible. And it's like, there's another 10, 20 hours it would take to get it.
Are those the little like scenarios?
Yeah, where you got to run through as the...
See, I love them. I thought they were brilliant.
But have you, that's the question, have you guys gone back to that game to get those trophies after the fact? Or does it really turn you sour?
I've 100%ed it. I've got all the DLC stuff, and I haven't gone back and picked up that game or even thought about playing it, which is bizarre because I know I had such a good time.
That and Control, both in sort of like the same 2 week stint of I'm just doing this. I'm gonna walk under 500 steps or whatever that was. That one that was a nightmare. Not open a loot box, the chest.
Oh yeah,
calling it a loot box. Now. Yeah. And not healing in one.
Yar, I found an ancient loot box.
You can't get me, capitalism. But and then there's ones like Rainbow Six. Years later, I went back and got that, and I got it. I was about to get it, and then they changed the damn trophies.
Yeah,
and then it took me even longer to get.
Well, the weird thing is, when this happens, I genuinely find myself almost being scorned. I'm like, well, I mean, I've completed it now, but now you've taken away my nice little round number, and you've told me that I've only completed 74% of the game. I'm like, well, you lie, game. I'm not going back to this now.
I mean, what we're experiencing here is like, do you remember a while back? I'm pretty sure we had Benji on the podcast as well, and we were talking about boss designs and how they were sort of changed over the years. And it comes back again to this gameplay loop of and immersion of chasing a reward or having a reason to keep playing. And it was like we were talking about a D&D, the first boss ever that had that golden orb or whatever it was behind it. And the developer was saying like, well, if you just beat the dragon, like, so what? You've done something, but who cares sort of thing. But I added in this orb so that it gave importance and weight to that orb. And when the player gets it, they're suddenly like, hey, I beat that dragon to get that orb, and it suddenly means that they want to play more because what else can they get?
And obviously the hilarious part of that is when you reach a game's end game and you've completed stuff, and then it gives you a item and you find no use of that item because you've already completed everything else. But for some odd reason, you've got it now. You're like, well, I've got to play something with
Dead Space 3 with the finger foam gun, the one that can kill anything by having Isaac Clarke just going bang, 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 which is hilarious. You unlock it for like doing the hardest difficulty mode. But once you've played through the hardest difficulty mode, why would you want to go back and do it again? Because I mean, you can breeze through the game, but you've already done it all, so what's the point?
Going back to Resident Evil 2, unlimited rocket launcher.
Just
fire that boy at everyone and you can get through in about 30 minutes.
I did that once just to be like, well, I can do it, so I will do it.
Again, in RE4, I think like the seventh playthrough I did of that, I was just like,
unlimited rocket launchers there.
Just gonna fire.
Take that, Zalazar, you prick!
One hit dead.
But on the topic of platinum trophies and 100% gamer score and stuff like that, I think the numerical value is interesting because before we get into looter shooters and how they have numbers pop up and you can go into the science about that. And I will say that one thing that I've noticed from playing competitive multiplayer shooters more and more over the last decade and seeing how they've changed is that developers are constantly finding ways to make it feel as though you're contributing, even if you're not necessarily doing much. Like if you play Battlefield 5 for now, for instance, and that's obviously it's great in one way because they're measuring contributions in different ways. Like you'll get points for reviving people, for resupplying people, for healing people, for building fortifications. But at the end of the round, when you have your different scores, it ranks you based on different things. So say, just so people feel what they've rewarded, if you were the third best reviver on your team, it'll say, oh, you were the third best reviver and you got this much score and stuff. But in the grand scheme of things, well, you weren't the best. So therefore I find it very interesting how games are constantly now trying to figure out as many different ways of recognizing achievement. And I can't tell whether the cynic in me is saying that's for people who aren't contributing in more typical avenues.
Well, you also think of that, that classic, I say classic now, it is a classic quote from The Incredibles, when everyone is super, no one is. And by basically saying, you're the fourth best pigeon shooter Battlefield 1. Yeah. And if you're like, okay. But I did it, yay, sort of thing. So it's interesting how they're sort of placating people along the way.
It's kind of like Battlefront 2 got rid of surfacing deaths.
Yeah, yeah.
And just sort of things like that. That just takes a bit of negativity out of the way. And with like the new, especially Gears has gone this way, especially with 5 in the Horde mode, where the certain characters are now have certain specific roles. So if you want to be the person who's fixing things and building and have a vast array of, I can build turrets, you've got to be like Adele or someone. Or if like I like playing as like a different character where I'm just the sniper guy who's just going to shoot these people.
So I've not actually played Gears 5 yet. Do you unlock like weapons and skins and stuff like that?
The skin economy thing is a bit weird at the moment. I'm still confused by it because there's like iron and then there's another currency. I bought toast. I bought a toast emblem.
A toast?
Just toast emblem, yeah.
Okay, right. Just so when I thought I misheard him then.
When I tag someone, a bit of toast above their head.
But it's little things like that. Yeah. It's, again, it's a reward that you had to play time in the game to unlock. And and I miss the days of unlockables. Do you remember like playing Time Splitters 2 or Time Splitters 3 or any Time Splitters game? And on every game that you did, you unlocked something new.
That's why Spider-Man PS4 was so great, because it brought back the unlockable costumes.
Oh, the amount of skins and costumes. And they all had abilities as well. It made you feel like it was impactful. Even if you didn't like the style of it, having the ability that came with it was just great.
I think that's why battle passes are so prevalent right now, especially like with Fortnite. And I'm a victim of this as well, the PUBG one, where I've got every single one and I like to get those lovely new colourful dresses or whatever they've got. At the moment I'm running around the battlefield in the red cocktail dress with like a nice pretty hat, and I'm just going to shoot you and then take and I've won.
It's interesting you're saying about just like bigger sort of war things, because the concept of persistent warfare is something that a lot of developers are realising now. Like have you played For Honor?
No, but I was going to bring up another example of a game that is coming out that, that realizes that it's the as a service model,
is
but Marvel's Avengers. That's going to introduce a thing where you're constantly having to react to different events going along with your team, which is a great thing for a superhero game because you are superheroes. But the idea that the war never ends, and what if you're like, you know, you're eight and you're like, oh, I'm getting a text in my phone that's saying that Captain America needs help. Mom, I need to get back home right now.
I have to play in order, otherwise my team is. And it's basically about putting importance back onto the player.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Like you were saying before about making them feel important through their actions of being rewarded, even for the most sort of like minuscule thing, but it's making them feel like they are part of the war effort, as it were, big air quotes.
And
on
it's
that.
It's weird because in a way, all this is so good that they're trying to play this and like get more out of a game. But at the same time, it does kind of handle the feel like, oh, I've just got to go back and I've got to go back, and they never want you to leave, sort of thing.
Well, yeah,
they
want
you to spend more money.
That's, we're seeing more of that in more like online video games, like you say, like, you know, Red Dead Online now has daily challenges. And if you do what a set amount of daily challenges each day, you get a challenge streak, and that increases the amount of stuff you get rewarded for doing more challenges. And it basically saying, if you log in this day, you'll do a Battlefield 5 again, one each week, there is a new event going on. And then you notice these events. And one thing that I think is interesting here is, you know, FOMO, or the fear of missing out, because when they have these regional, these seasonal events, you have specific things that if you don't play enough, you're going to miss out on. And one thing that I think the game that kickstarted that really was Overwatch. And when Overwatch came out and I was sinking hours of each day into that game, I remember when it got to the Blackwatch event and I was like, McCree's my favorite character. Mm-hmm. And I was playing so much. But the thing is, the further you get to level 100 and then you prestige and go over again, the slower you unlock loot boxes. When you're like early levels, you're getting a loot box like pretty much every other game. Whereas now at the end one, it's taking multiple games to get these loot boxes. And as the days were going on, I was like, am I actually going to get this thing or not?
Yeah.
Am I going to get it? And I caved in and I bought loot boxes because I was desperate to get this thing and I got the skin. And then by the time the event ended, I got one more loot box naturally from playing and it had the skin in there again. Whoa. It was a duplicate. And I was like, if I was just patient, if I just waited.
But you did, but hindsight's 2020 in that case, isn't it? Because you might not have got
it. But I was desperate. I don't play Overwatch anymore, but I was desperate enough to have that skin that I invested in my own money to actually get it happen
Kind of did that myself with the last battle pass as well. I really wanted the dress, and I was just enough where I was like, if I slip it £5, there you go. I'm going to get enough levels and I'll have enough coupons that boost me all the way to the end. And I got it. And I'm still playing it, and I'm still wearing it, and it's FOMO. Like I want
it's
people
tainted by blood money.
It's tainted by the fact that I spent a little bit extra money, and then it's also we don't really get this here because I feel like as you get older, you don't really get that. But with say Fortnite, the younger player base, there's been this problem recently of like people if they don't get these battle passes and get the new skin, they become what we call as defaults. And that's now become a way...
like an insult.
It's now become a way of bullying in the playground, like calling them
the
defaults.
It sounds like sci-fi dystopia, isn't it? Like if you've got body augmentations and you've got someone who's like, hey, you stupid default, what you going to do about it? Yeah,
I don't like that. I don't like it either, man.
Yeah, so it's like, it's good that these games are keeping us going and keeping us wanting to play more and giving us things to do. But at the same time, the negative side also might outweigh it in a bit.
My issue is that there is too much to do in general. Like for the majority of people, they're going to be holding down a career or going to school or whatever, and it's going to be like a 9-to-5 professional thing. They get home, they've got their own personal stuff to sort out. On top of that, they've now got 5 games that are sending the messages and notifications saying that you haven't checked in on Mortal Kombat 11, you've missed out on this, or there's like a thing that was a skin that was only available then. It becomes like almost pressure. And what that fine line is between making a player feel involved in and expanding and maybe developing narrative for the game itself and actually turning it into busy work. And that's a danger because games is a job. And if it gets to the point where it gets annoying, I immediately switch off.
It's kind of why
I don't like being told what to do.
It's kind of why I stopped Division 2 as well. Just I can't have too many of these schluters that are going along in the world because, they just, as you said, they just take up your time and it's too much to do. It's like, I can barely handle 2, say, multiplayer games and then a single player one that I'm playing on my own sort of thing. It's like you're juggling it as well as your career, as well as, do I go to Wotherspoons with everyone after work or do I just go straight home and earn my thing?
And it's bizarre, isn't it? Because I remember being like a young kid and like coming back like after like school GCSEs were going on, like the highest summer, whatever, and you come back home from school and you just go, I just want to chill out and play some games. Nowadays, I come back and I'm like, well, if I don't log into this one, I'm going to miss out on this. So you're like, panic, I'll meet you guys later. I've got to go home
It's
like Tamagotchi.
I was just about to say, it's like Tamagotchi. It's literally like Tamagotchi. It's like, oh, if I don't feed my Tamagotchi, he's going to die.
Yeah, but I'm the one that's dying because I forget to eat.
I think that's why the satisfaction of a platinum trophy for me is because I know it's done.
Yeah.
You're done now. Yeah. You're in the bin.
That's terrifying. So it's almost like, you know, gaming as a chore and like you get a sense of relief. A game's been completed and that sense of accomplishment.
That's what I think some of these games are trying to be. They're trying to take a part of your life and they want you there every day sort of thing. And it does work sometimes, but then you have to be like, wait a minute, let's just put you down and go somewhere else sort of thing.
It's almost like conditioning. Like games are conditioning you to expect this is the standard that you're going to get from it. Like with franchises, you're not meant to, don't ask outside of the box because you're not getting it. And like they even have in-game features that trick you into thinking that you're doing something that you're constantly achieving, and it's the thing that you were mentioning before. So I was reading ages ago when it was on Diablo 2, or it was an old game, that the reason that sometimes you get some games that have, when you do damage to an opponent, that numbers pop over their head, is so that they can then be, it's artificially telling you that you're doing something. Makes sense, right? Because it's nice to see that you are chipping away at somebody's health bar. Even though a regular health bar over the head would do just the same job. Mm-hmm. But psychologically, it's completely different, because then when you get a more powerful weapon and it goes from 20 damage to, say, 200 damage, you feel like you have improved. In actuality, killing an enemy late game versus how long it took you to kill an enemy your same level at the beginning mm-hmm. is exactly the same. It takes 5 minutes to kill this ogre, takes 5 minutes to kill this giant pig demon at the beginning of the game or whatever. Like, it's just artificial, but yet your brain is telling you, no, I am better at this game now.
Like, it's like this sweet serotonin. Almost,
yeah. I feel like that we're in We Happy yeah. Few occasionally with this sort of thing. Like,
if I don't have a health bar on a boss or some sort of enemy that takes quite a while to fight, it can be infuriating, but then mm-hmm. there's some games that do it good, like Resident Evil 2,
yeah.
where
back on this again.
Where we see his eye on his like elbow that goes a bit red. Yeah, and lets you know
Monster
that
Hunter
are
used
happening.
To do that as well. I'm fairly excited. I mean, I'm trying to remember.
So which game?
Monster Hunter.
Oh yeah,
Lost Planet. Sorry, as well. Yes. That used to do that, where you used to have visual cues mm-hmm. for where to attack and. The animations would change the further you're getting on the fight and see how long someone's injured for as well, which is
absolutely love Monster Hunter though, because that game is on paper like it's just boss design the game mm-hmm. and it doesn't have health bars or anything like that yeah. but yet it manages to convey how damaged a creature is with its animations.
The thing
stuff.
Is though, if I was playing that and one of those things ran away after about half an hour fight, now I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah,
the point you make about the enemy suffering and you having the numbers popping mm-hmm. on your head, that's really interesting to me, because it's almost as if you're aware of that at the time mm-hmm. though, because if you go and attack and you go into a high level area and you don't have a strong enough weapon and you come back to it later on and you've got basically the same weapon but it has a different name, it's the same skin, it's mm-hmm. just got a different name and it glows purple or whatever mm-hmm. and you go back and you start doing the damage to them, you are like, oh, I've progressed, and when really in actual fact it's just because they have, they're more bullet spongy than
yep,
before.
Exactly.
And that's an interesting thing. Is that compelling gameplay?
Well, I'd say no, but that's why I feel like games like Borderlands 2 and 3 especially are games that stand out from that, because what they've done is they've made all of their loot, because of the permutations mm-hmm. and the amount of random sort of bits mashed together, I can't remember what it's called, procedurally generated mm-hmm. guns, it means that every gun does feel unique yeah. in some way. You might not notice the huge difference, but like it might be the way that the bullets hang about in the air for a bit, or they dip after a certain time.
Have a gun that shot a gun?
They have a gun that when you reload it, you throw it like a grenade.
I remember okay. that one.
And,
yeah.
a gun that you... I'm pretty sure that you fire a gun and a gun has legs in this new one.
Yes, okay. There is a mini gun. But yeah.
They've still not got a gun that shoots a gun, though.
I'm pretty sure that they've got one. They must do. I feel like that's so obvious.
Does it have James' gun?
Yeah, it just comes out and goes like... He just goes like as Hades.
God.
But yeah, like there are so many ways that game developers effectively trick us into keeping playing their games. I mean, you've got the season passes that we've discussed before, like even the gameplay stuff, like making you feel like you're being more empowered, because that is a core feature of why we play games to begin with. But then you've got other stuff as well, which is like the narrative feedback. Like sometimes you'll just play a game so that you want to see how it develops and who's going to die at the end or what's going to happen.
I mean, I think that we're talking about there, I think there's an interesting delineation we've stumbled upon here, is that, you know, games that make a chore out of being in them and mm-hmm. games that grip you in a narrative sense and, mm-hmm. and take you to this place and you're there and you're living it and you're exploring because of your own free will, not because of any sort of obligation, because you genuinely want to be there. And I thought that was the case of Red Dead Redemption 2, even though I had things like, oh, you've got to bring meat back to the camp, otherwise people aren't going to be full, or you need to make sure that you're donating and stuff. You need to keep doing this. And there are lots of different things and properties that are going on in that world at any given time. But because you're so invested in Dutch's gang and everyone else there, it doesn't feel bolted on. It feels like an organic part of the storytelling experience, which is why when I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2, I was on that game for hours and hours at a time. And it's such a huge game. That story goes on forever.
You've not left.
I haven't left, not at all. But by the time it was over, I felt like my emotions were just completely just on the floor, because it was like, I've gone through all this. I literally gave life to this group. Mm-hmm. I helped them live, and now they're dying. And it's genuinely, it was one of the most intelligent ways of making, in any other game, that could have been just been seen as like an obligation to do something. But in Red Dead, when they narrativize it so well, you're compelled to do it, because you're like, well, I'm so invested in, I don't want Lenny to go hungry. Not Lenny. He can't go hungry. I've got a feed him.
Lenny.
Exactly. So like, you got to do all that. And I think that's a really clever example. Of course, not every game can do that.
No.
But it is an interesting way of taking those mechanics that people would see as being ostensibly quite tedious or deceiving them into playing the game for longer and giving them a genuine reason for actually doing it.
There is something to say about the game that takes a piece of you with it when you finished it.
Yeah.
Like, for me, Red Dead was one of them. Mm-hmm. And probably another one was like maybe The Last of Us.
Mm. Yeah.
By the time you get out of there and you're just like, oh.
Horizon Zero Dawn for me as well. Just kind of like you just end up getting, when you come through the other side, you're like,
yes,
that was an experience,
especially that last like third, the final battles you have and that sort of thing. Like it just really, so I don't know what it grabs onto you, and then when you let go, it's like kind of like how I felt at the end of the Lord of the Rings. That when finally put it, I was like, I miss this now already. Like I just want to go back in.
I guess it brings up a good point, which is the sense of the end game, because at the end, at some point, no matter what game you're playing, you will suddenly become aware that you are playing a game, and you'll ask yourself, maybe not out loud, but you'll just suddenly be like, what am I doing? Mm. And sometimes that's answered by, I've noticed this, like you look at annualization for games, it's something that we're going to be discussing later on in another podcast. Games like FIFA and your sports sims and stuff like that, when you get good at that game, usually is about a year into it and the system gets reset every single year. So you don't become too aware of the end game and you buy everything again exactly the same.
It's interesting because with FIFA, I'm never interested in the Ultimate Team stuff. I can't get my head around it. I just don't care. I think it's all very predatory and just very nasty. I have been playing the career modes on those games for a while now, and they're poorly constructed. They never see any attention because FIFA are more concerned with putting money into, you know, Ultimate Team and that's where their main cash cow is and whatever. So playing the career mode, and even while, you know, when you first start, it's like, oh yeah, I'm fulfilling my fantasy of being a football manager. Yeah. And then you play more and more and more, and you realize, oh, I can see the patterns. The patterns and the cracks slowly start to develop as you keep on playing. And that's an interesting one, because the way that game's meant to keep you hooked is like you say, like the, you know, scoring goals, doing well, but it's when you realize, you figure out the game system, and then everything just plays easily and you get bored that way.
Yeah. Every time I say it, I don't get it with FIFA games or anything like that. I remember I got so many of those WWE games for so many years.
Yeah, exactly.
And when I finally stopped getting them, I was like, I don't miss this.
Mm. Yeah, because you look at it, and especially in the current trend today, you've got NBA 2K20. Everyone's talking about that at the moment for all of the wrong reasons, unfortunately.
Cheering at a slot machine.
Well, it's also just the fact that on PC, somebody found out that the NBA 2K19 logo was used, or other assets were just ported straight across, that there was a sheer laziness applied to that game, which makes you suddenly aware that the end game of franchises is it's going to cannibalize itself. Like, there's no way that it's sustainable into the future. But it's something that we will be talking about in the future.
So I guess what we're basically saying is, like, yes, there are probably like two, there's a good way and there's a bad way of like, they can keep us hooked.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You don't want to be deceived.
Yes. No, exactly. That's the thing.
And you said, what am I doing? Like sitting there trying to get the Series 2.0 achievement, just shooting the same four enemies over and over again for hours. Like, do I need to be doing this, or could I play something else or do something else?
I guess it's like the immersion breaks down as the same thing of cinema. It's a suspension of disbelief. Like, you play by the rules and we'll just go to a magical world together. But there's a difference between suspension of disbelief and being lied to or being deceived, like you're saying. And some of them really do try and do the con job on you. I mean, some games, like, is it Eve Online? You can turn that into an actual job. Yeah. Like, but you have to work a full-time hours to do it. Like, it's a strange world we live in, for sure.
I'm very curious to see how this develops over the next few years and the next console generation, and whether we see more of these. Because I think the further we get into this, the more transparent it becomes. Mm-hmm. I think that way we'll probably see people leaning into more experiences, maybe like a Red Dead Redemption 2 or whatever, you know. But yeah, please let us know what you thought of video game immersion, or what you think of actually how the science of how video game studios actually keep you playing. Have you ever felt deceived, or are you willingly engaging in this beloved hobby of ours? Please let us know your thoughts down in the comments below. Reach out to us on social media as well. You can catch Jules at
RetroJ with a zero.
You can catch me at You and Runes Things. You can catch Ben Roy
at Ben Roy Turner.
That's cool. And we'll see you next time. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe, and head over and check over the What Culture Gaming podcast on Acast and other places too. Anyway, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.